If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello, everybody. We have Tina Brower-Kraska here. She is the director, co-founder, and lead educator at Red Oaks Forest School, serving Central and Eastern Kentucky. Tina holds a BS in Natural Resource Conservation and an MS from the University of Kentucky, where she studied the behavior and reintroduction of peregrine falcons in Kentucky. She has served as a naturalist in Ohio and a raptor biologist with the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources, focusing on public engagement and collaborative conservation. She is also a certified Southeastern Appalachian naturalist and frequent co-host of the Nature Guys podcast. She is passionate about connecting youth and communities to the natural world through education, exploration, and play. Without further ado, Tina. Hello, everybody. We are here with Tina Brower-Kraska, and she is from the Red Oaks Forest School. Welcome, welcome, Tina.
Thank you so much for having me. So glad to be here.
Oh, great. You are all in for a incredible journey here. Just to let you know, if you are listening, this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that we are going to be chatting away and also looking at incredible, beautiful pictures from Tina's forest school, the Red Oak School. So we're going to be doing that. If you would like to see those beautiful pictures and have access to all of our Outdoor Classrooms tour and talks, that you can become a Circle member and you get access to those as well. So welcome, Tina. Just to start right off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are from and give us a little peek about your journey before the Red Oaks Forest School?
Sure. Yeah, so I actually was born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago, but fell in love with Kentucky growing up, visiting my mama and papa. And just this morning, I was thinking about how special those times were because I just remember feeling so much peace when I'd be out there visiting here in Kentucky. So fast forward, I graduate high school and I decide it's time to get out of here. I want to go to Kentucky. So I moved in with my mama and papa and kind of started the journey of doing natural resource conservation and management. Got my master's degree in peregrine falcon ecology. Just loved everything about being in nature, behavior, animal behavior, ecology. That was just like my jam. I wanted to work with the plants and animals. I had no desire or interest or ever on my radar to work with children. But, you know, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners would understand, once you become a parent, that just all changes. So, you know, I've done a lot of things in my journey. I started a photography company in Chicago and also helped co-start a farm-to-table restaurant. So just a little jack of all trades. I like to create things and vision things. And I brought all those skills to the table with Red Oaks Forest School, which really began organically as a busy mom, a homeschooling mom with my daughter who was extremely active, only child. I just knew that she needed something that I was struggling to provide for her. And a couple of friends and I decided we wanted to make sure we were getting kids, our kids, outdoors in nature, kind of committing to that time. And that's how it all began, was just making sure that I'm holding myself accountable to my own child and to myself to make time for that. Yeah, from there, Red Oaks just grew into the organization that is today.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into that and really learning more about what you are doing, because you're really, I mean, it's amazing that it just started as that little seed and as a parent and homeschooling. I've heard that story many times, and it's just amazing how children really can transform our thinking. So can you share a little bit about, it sounds like even from a young child that you were in, just in love with nature and being outdoors and had this passion and went on to study. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about how that has sort of impacted and even working with children to maybe a philosophy of education?
Sure. That's a great question. I've never really thought about my journey quite with that frame, but what I can say is that I just always felt a deep connection to animals and to nature from a young age. My family had this interesting thing where we had a bunch of kids and we all got to kind of pick our family field trip for the year. And somehow I got two. And I always picked the zoo and the Morton Arboretum. So the Brookfield Zoo and the Morton Arboretum. So any of Chicago listeners probably feel some relationship to that. But those were my ways of really connecting. I looked forward, you know, to those opportunities year round. So I don't know. It was just like this kind of longing to be connected to nature. And then when I got into high school, I worked for PetSmart and I started using my paychecks to send money to, you know, all of these environmental organizations, which I got all the cool swag to go with it. And it just felt like really awesome to be a part of supporting these nonprofits. So I think that was just something that I stumbled upon and I loved. I felt so proud to be a part of those initiatives. And at the same time, I was falling in love with photography. And I remember going to a college like job fair kind of thing. And my dad saying, well, photography sounds like a nice hobby, you know, and kind of steering the direction of picking something more practical. And, you know, I was pretty conflicted, but I'm glad I went the route I went because I got an amazing education and really got to dive deeper into understanding the whys of how nature works. And instead of just being kind of an admirer, I started to really grow in my knowledge, which of course only deepened my passion and my commitment. And I was even part of a little group on campus called Green Thumb, and I get to kind of test out some of my sharing my voice, speaking up for natural spaces. So those kinds of experiences for me growing up felt very empowering and felt like freedom. And that was really important to me, I think, as a creative child, to have places where I could engage the way that it felt most naturally to me. So fast forward to a parent, I have this wild child who is barefoot and loves, you know, everything outdoors. And I just felt like a strong desire to support that love and passion in a way that really wasn't available to me for all kinds of reasons, but really wasn't quite as available to me. So as a new parent, of course, you're excited to just show them all the things and teach them all the things. Like, I want to show you and teach you X, Y, Z. But my daughter is very tenacious and she's got her own ideas. And so I quickly realized that we were going to have to be on a journey of sharing what we were seeing and experiencing and what we knew or wanted to know, instead of kind of the easy route of like, no, you're going to, I'm going to teach you and you're going to listen. So yeah, that turned into a new way of thinking about education. I never planned to be an educator. That was never my goal. But I think as parents, we're just naturally prepared and set up to, you know, educate our children within the spaces that we have, you know, to lead and guide them. So once I started Red Oaks, my goal was to set aside and hold space for free play in nature, because that's what I felt like was really missing. But we just got so much demand to kind of take my professional education and background and, you know, share that with the kids that were coming. And so it was an invitation from my community to step into that teacher role. And I thought, okay, well, I'll give this a try. And of course, knowing nothing about education, I was probably teaching kindergarten kids at a high school level, you know, and I was like, check this out, you know, just blank stares most of the time, but we could share space and we could share passion. And eventually They really helped me learn to see what they could take in and what they could process in the foundation that could be laid to get to those deeper concepts as they grew up. So yeah, it was just a natural evolution. And then the more that we got into it, the more I took on some ownership of that education for myself, learning to become an educator with my own education instead of by like crashing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So we're looking at this beautiful circle of stumps with a fire pit in the middle. And this is one of your spaces?
Yes, this is our very first space, actually. It's called The Wilds. And we were very fortunate to meet a couple of private landowners named Angie and Colby Christensen, who just recently bought this property from their parents, who were environmental educators themselves. And they were going to use it for a cabin rental business. But we asked if we would be able to use some of that space that they were kind of leaving as part of the experience to be out in nature with their business and use it for our forest school. And they were so supportive and so wonderful. And they were just like, yes, whatever you want to do. So we went in and we created some spaces like this where we could, you know, do some lessons. And now we have a fire pit, a fire circle, at every single one of our programs. It's just such
So you have more than one program. Can you just sort of maybe do a broad sort of stroke of your forest school and that you have different locations? Is that right?
Yes. So basically what we came up with was two systems of programming. And one is what we call like our forest school programs. Within that, there are eight programs. So it's quite comprehensive. But our whole goal was to create a system that started at infancy and went all the way through graduating high school. So within those eight programs, different ages can kind of connect to different types of programming. We have two that are in the early childhood. We have Mighty Acorns, which is a drop-off preschool, and Forest Families, which is caregiver attended for those people who are working with kids younger than three and also just not quite ready to do a drop-off. Then we move into our kind of early, middle, elementary into adolescence programming. We work with a lot of homeschool families, but I will say we've had great luck getting excused absences for our programming from public and private school kids as well. So I don't like to call them homeschool programs, even though they're, you know, predominantly homeschool families, but that is our STEAM and our humanities program, as well as Trailblazers. And so the common theme there is that they're connecting to nature, building a relationship with nature and their peers, and it's completely nature immersive. So we're outdoors, rain or shine, hot or cold, as I'm sure many of your listeners are aware, but we have different kind of themes. So for our Trailblazers, we start with a story about somebody who has overcome adversity by challenging maybe social norms. These are people generally from the past, but some from the present who are, you know, coming from communities that maybe historically or currently marginalized and having to kind of fight for their rights. So we use that as an opportunity to talk about what it means to do hard things, whether it's kind of emotional, but also potentially physical. And after the story, after they kind of learn about one of these trailblazers, they go out and they actually build a trail. So that way they get to kind of take that inspiration, apply it to their physical bodies, their emotional selves, work through those challenging things. We also have a humanities class where we use nature as inspiration for music, art, and storytelling. And we have a STEAM class, which is what you might guess. It's nature-based topics. Like this semester, we're doing geology. And we go through kind of a series of pieces of the program that are anchored in geology, but kind of the same rhythm that are all like highlighting different aspects of science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And let's see. Then we have a Forest Friends program, which is an after-school program. Taking Flight, which the photo on the right is from our Taking Flight program, which is a partnership program at the University of Kentucky. Dr. Westneat, who's an ornithologist, volunteers his time to come out and work with our middle and high school students and show them the real live hands-on process of doing field science.
Wow.
So that's a cool program. And then finally, our Conservation Club, which is a community service stewardship-based program also for adolescents.
Holy Manoli. Gosh, from just starting out with your child to like, this is amazing. I mean, you not just one little program. It's you really you're going through the ages and the stages, which you don't see a lot. I mean, do you hear that a lot with teenagers?
Yes.
The adolescents that it's kind of runs dry, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. I think what I've noticed in the movement and what we tried to incorporate into our model is that there is a significant drop-off in nature-based education after elementary school. And our kids were growing up in this program. I mean, they were turning into middle school and high schoolers, and they weren't ready to be done learning and playing in nature. They were really thriving in this space. So we really built the program to support the kids that we started with as they grew. And Taking Flight was one of those, conservation club as well. So we decided to look at the Stanford report on environmental literacy. And what we saw was that in adolescence, there's a shift towards getting mastery of skills and close working with mentors in order to sustain that environmental ethics and compassion into adulthood and carry through, you know, to their future lives, whether it's just personal or professional. So we created those programs around those ideas and how we could support them during that phase of life.
I'm amazed. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going on in these two pictures? It's just, sure. There's so much, a picture has 1,000 words. So we're going to.
Yeah. So what you see here is Dr. Westneat with the glasses, the older gentleman. He is our amazing champion for helping us kind of reintroduce science or repackage it, I guess, a little bit to be inquiry-based, curiosity-based. We really encourage these kids to make the experience their own. But as an ornithologist and director of the field station, he has access to the 60-acre property right inside Lexington. And he's an ornithologist, so he is a licensed bird bander. So the kids made these traps, and we put them all around the field station, and we began a long study of the local cardinal population. And we do get other birds that we keep track of, but we're trying to focus that research on cardinals. And now we have, I think, 5 years of program data that we're taking the kids, and we're teaching them how to make professional posters. They get to go to the Kentucky Academy of Science and present their posters. And usually they're doing that alongside college students, and they're only high school, you know, so they've been really, it's been a tremendous skill for them to pick up, but also to see the pride when they get awards for their posters competing alongside other college students or even graduate students. So,
An opportunity. What an opportunity. And so then here's some of the younger ones. Maybe this looks like the parent-child program.
Yes. So this is a peek into our forest families. And we're in partnership with the Lexington Parks Department here at Raven Run. And basically, we just come into this little space that they had set up. And we offer a variety of invitations for children and caregivers to explore on their own. We do provide kind of a basic rhythm. We share tea. You can see our owl puppet there. That's Mother Owl. She's waiting somewhere secret for the kids to find and bring her to class, which they really enjoy. We have all kinds of, you know, environmental, nature-based kinds of things out for them to explore on their own. And then each time we'll do like an activity that they can participate in or not. We sing songs. It's just a really nice time to just get comfortable being in nature together and establish a rhythm and a relationship. Child and caregiver also with nature by their side.
Yeah, it's so, and I think it's just as wonderful for the parents. I run a parent-child program as well. And I find that it's with these young parents, it's so nice to just be introducing them to this world and that they'll continue on. And to you to have these incredible programs that they feed into is just brilliant. So again, you've described some of your programming. You've got all different spaces. And you have all different locations as well, right?
Yes. I forgot to say that. Thank you. We are in 4 different locations in central and eastern Kentucky. People were familiar with that geography. That looks like Frankfort, Lexington, Berea, and Stanton. And Stanton's by the Red River Gorge. And that's where we started. So we grew out from there. Part of what helped us choose these locations is that in the beginning, we had people driving over 2 hours to get to our programs. And once we knew we had some capacity to expand, we really wanted to help those families get back into their own community and build there. So that's some of how we chose those locations. Also, based on our program partners, we ended up getting access to Wessex Farm, which is a local brewery. They had a large farm and they invited us to host our programs there. Like I said, we have a relationship with Lexington City Parks in UK. And then most recently, we developed a relationship with Eastern Kentucky University, Ambria College, to be able to access some of their spaces as well. That helps us keep our costs down. So we've tried to be really creative about where we're hosting these programs. And we've invited everyone to be a community partner, meaning We don't pay to use the spaces, but we're enriching them with these relationships that we're inviting on the property. And everybody has felt that that was a great exchange.
That's bartering. That's beautiful.
Yep.
Beautiful. Again, I think we've talked and talked and talked about why nature play is so important. And these pictures just say it all. And kids look very happy doing all different types of things. Wow. This is, you want to describe this picture?
Sure. So this looks like a little fairy house. We have kids that love to build and create. I could tell this is from our Frankfurt, probably Mighty Acorns class or maybe STEAM. Within every program, the kids are encouraged to explore and play on their own, completely undirected by their adults. And different programs have different degrees of, you know, teacher-directed time. But as part of our original mission, we think it's absolutely central to leave that unstructured time available to kids. And so this is one of their creations.
And yes, it is their imaginations, and not to have adults hovering over them and letting them just that freedom is incredible. So in your programming, and you've done such expansive work, and to think that you didn't have an education background, do you follow a curriculum? How do you share what you're doing with parents? How does all that work?
Yeah, great question. So we ended up designing our own curriculum for many of our programs. We do pull resources from other well-established things like Project Learning Tree, or, you know, sometimes we do some trainings out at the Great Smoky Mountains Institute at Tremont. So we're pulling in from amazing nature-based educators, but ultimately we have designed our own curriculum for all of our programs. And we're still in the process of doing that work today. You know, as you can imagine, it's ever evolving. And we share what we do with our parents through a variety of private, well, we started with private Facebook groups, but we've recently moved to another app because a lot of our families are getting off Facebook. So we needed to have something that would reach them. So we do a weekly share after every class. We write up what we did and we share these pictures to really help them to visualize and continue the conversation about what their students learned in class at home.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And I think that connection is so vital. You know, that they're, we do want the kids to be independent of the families, but to actually have the families involved. And I think showing them pictures and finding any which way to bring in the community is so, so vital. And look at these spaces, are look so much fun. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on here?
Sure. So this is also at our Frankfurt campus, and we bring in like lots of loose parts. This particular like patch of woods we cleared out to make it a little bit easier for kids to navigate. Another thing that we have learned from the biologist that owned the wilds, you know, the first property that we had, he was a herpetologist and he put tin. This might be helpful for some of your educators, but we used old sheets of tin to put on the edges of our program spaces, which attracts snakes. So it protects the snakes, protects our kids because they see that heat. They go there for cover. So we, you know, clear out some space and, you know, protect those spaces with those pieces of tin. And it's worked really, really well. We've never had any snake encounter, snake bite. But anytime that we go and check those tins, we see that the snakes are there. They're just staying in their space and we're staying in ours. So we do try to clear out some of that brush to make sure that we can see any potential hazards, poison ivy, not make spaces that are inviting to black widows or other, you know, venomous snakes. And then we just keep like tree branches or, you know, in this case, these crates, rocks, stuff like this as loose parts to stimulate play.
Fantastic. Fascinating. And here's some more pictures of the same spaces. Mm-hmm. Do you have any memorable experiences that sort of stand out? As, you know, you've already shared one with your lovely daughter that sort of got this ball rolling. But do you have any specific memories of Red Oaks Forest School that stand out for you?
Oh, that is a big question. You know, we've just started our 11th year. And I've been involved in every program, you know, that we offer. So I've had the opportunity to teach every single program, work with every single age group. There are just way too many to stand out, but I will say that one of the most powerful things, I'm kind of getting goosebumps now that I talk about it, but you know, when we started this 11 years ago, we had a group of about 12 kids, as young as 2 and as old as 7, and this spring, I just graduated from high school. One of our kids that started with us at 7 years old. That was so emotional for me because, you know, we were able to build that system as she grew to support her. And she said at her graduation, Red Oaks has been the single most important thing in my life, and I wouldn't be who I am without it. And that's just why we did everything we did and why we're going to keep on doing it, because I think kids really need community support. They need other adults. They need stability. And, you know, nature provides a sense of continuity. It's ever changing on a maybe a day-to-day and seasonal scale, but it's ever, you know, stable kind of in the big picture, you know, and it anchors these kids in a place where they have access to tools to support their mental and physical health and their education. And just to hear these kids growing up in the program and then be able to communicate back to us what the impact has been has just been, you know, really, really amazing for me.
Wow. That's beautiful. Makes me be too. So you have mentioned seasonal challenges, weather conditions, safety concerns. I know we're speaking to the choir, but I just have to ask the question anyway. How do you manage that with all your different ages and stages? And I'll leave it up to you.
It's very complicated. Obviously, you know, the more we grow, the more we run into people who are curious about what this looks like, naturally coming with some fears. These are, you know, their most precious people that they're entrusting us with. So there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of concerns, all very valid and natural. And we take weather very seriously, primarily potential for hypothermia and then any thunderstorms. So anything outside of that, we really just lean on a lot of communication, parents talking to other parents, incorporating maybe a parent friend or liaison to help a new parent understand that challenging weather is part of the growth. And it really is, you know, you're not going to get sick because you're out in the cold. If anything, you're building that immune system to combat illness. And that's a very common kind of misconception. Of course, if you already are sick, then being out in stressful weather conditions can weaken your immune system and make you sicker. And I think that's where that correlation comes in. But in general, being outdoors and pushing your body's physical limits only strengthens it. So we try to educate, we try to communicate. And yeah, we cancel if there's going to be a significant risk of lightning. When thunder roars, we go indoors. You know, we try to do all that. Our teachers are wilderness first aid, CPR and first aid certified. So we try to, you know, make sure our staff are up to any challenges that they would see. We have satellite phones in areas where we don't have good service, different policies and procedures like that to help our staff know what to do in an emergency. And sometimes, you know, on our programs, like our STEAM programs, we might have 45 kids on site all at once. You know, we tell the parents, you're not in class, but you know, stay on the site, you know, so we have extra parental support around for emergencies as well.
Incredible. I just love these pictures. They're just absolutely good. We're looking at of kids that are maybe bird watching or...
Yeah, it was really sweet. This was the first semester on this new campus at Maywoods Lab, which is part of Eastern Kentucky University. And I asked the kids on the first day, what are some things that you guys want to do and learn about? One of them said, birds. And I was like, great, I got binoculars. So I just, you know, brought the binoculars and we just went bird watching that morning as part of our day. And that's something that I encourage our educators and always do myself is start with, what do you want to do? What do you want to experience? And how can we fold that in?
Yeah. You know,
the things we have planned.
So important. And I love their very full backpacks and they just look like they're real naturalists. It's so exciting to see.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of your work revolves around conservation, and that's your background and what you've studied and how you've really brought that into the fold. Is there any particular way, aside from what you've already shared with us, the way that you educate children about conservation without scaring them?
Yeah, great question. That's a real concern, you know, that children can take information and not quite understand all the timelines and everything that's involved and get anxiety about it. So what we do is focus on building the relationship. And we feel like, you know, anytime you have a strong and healthy relationship, you're more invested in it. Just like a friend or a family member, you care about it more, you think about it more. So we really just start with that. We focus on that. We do touches of conservation, but we really talk about proactive things that people can do to help nature, to have compassion for nature, instead of focusing on what the problem is, because they're going to have plenty of time to understand the problem. Now, I will say at adolescence, we get into that a little bit more because we have more kids and adolescents are in public school settings. And at least here in Kentucky, climate change is fairly well avoided as a topic. And our students came to us and said, hey, you know, our teachers aren't talking about this, but we hear it about the news. We want to know more. We're really concerned. And so, you know, I tried to address anxiety with education. Let's talk about these problems. Let's talk about the resilience of nature and the ability of nature to correct course if we can be a partner in correcting course. And we just talk about it in a way that's empowering instead of, you know, what are all the problems and what do we have to be worried about?
Brilliant. Brilliant. I think all of this just goes into my next question. Just is that nature immersion that you are aiming for.
Jump in on that for a really quick minute. I think that, you know, one thing that we're seeing is that parents are coming with kids who are spending a lot of time on screens and they don't, you know, they want a more enriching life for their children, but, you know, some of them just feel like unequipped, you know, just not sure what to do. Where do I go? How do I do it? And that's been one of the most rewarding feedbacks that we've gotten too, is from parents to say, you know, thank you for helping us to see what the opportunities are, what we can do. And then also building that excitement and love in our kids, because now they're saying, let's do something else, you know, on the weekend or for family time, because there's more in their minds to imagine, you know, what there is to do, you know? Yeah. So we really see ourselves as, you know, as a nonprofit, as a community support system, you know, building towards that nature immersive lifestyle for the whole family with our programs.
And it just feels like acupuncture. It's like it's, you know, you're going to certain points and it's just unlocking the thinking and the mindset around nature-based education, activities that they can possibly do, getting off of the screens and building that relationship with nature. I mean, it's just incredible. And again, I have to just commend you for not stopping at preschool or even the parent-child program, just to keep going and following these kids on their journey. And these are some more beautiful, beautiful pictures. Again, all the pictures are all different ages and stages and different terrains, different landscapes as well, where they're exploring and whatnot.
Yeah. And they, you know, it starts small. Like on the left, you have our little mighty acorns just balancing on some logs, to on the right, this is the same campus, believe it or not. But in Eastern Kentucky, we have access to kind of a mountain and a cliff. And we bring the kids up there, you know, and some of them are really anxious. They are really nervous about doing some of this exploration. But what's really, really powerful and amazing is that they help each other through these physical challenges. I don't have to do anything. You know, they encourage each other, they help each other, and they build compassion for who's afraid and who is brave, you know, and they assemble themselves into this cooperative, you know, teamwork challenge. And it's really cool.
Yeah, that's the magic. All right, superstar. So I went on your website and I discovered, not surprised at all, that you did a TED Talk.
I did.
Tell us the story behind your TED Talk.
Woo! Yes, the TED Talk. That was certainly one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was, you know, pretty intimidating, but there was a call out and this was in Corbin, Kentucky. So at the time, this is about an hour away from where I lived, but they were just seeking, you know, interesting and innovating things that were happening in Appalachia to highlight the beauty and diversity and the cultural coolness of Appalachia. And one of my friends was like, hey, you should go out for this. And I thought, oh, you know, sounds like a great opportunity to tell people about Red Oaks. I didn't realize, you know, just how intense it was going to be. And like, oh, by the way, it's not just this small audience. It's also, you know, everybody everywhere. But they were an amazing team. They really helped me to get my message across succinctly, be excited about, you know, this opportunity to share with people. And, you know, for me as a photographer, I got to share my photographs on the screen behind me. And I was really excited to share these moments that to me really embodied the power of what we were doing to bring peace and joy and mental and physical health support curiosity and wonder to children in Eastern Kentucky. At the time, we were only in Eastern Kentucky. So, yeah.
It's amazing. No, I recommend any listeners, if you want to go check it out, Tina's amazing TED Talk. So you did a really good job. It was like, rock on. Yeah.
Oh, well.
And you are another star in this upcoming movie, In Our Nature. And I think this might be how I connected with you. Can you tell us a little bit about this project? It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. What a gift and honor to be included in this. We actually just filmed this 1 year ago this week, actually, as the documentary team and the filmmakers came out. And they found us just through an internet search. I mean, they were really looking for programs that were bridging divides across typical dividing lines, political, religious, you know, urban, rural. They were wondering, can nature be a bridge? And when they came across our website, they saw that is exactly how we were approaching our programming, to be a place of community building and a bridge across divides, especially in our state. There's all kinds of that. So they were intrigued. They came out. They got to see our programs firsthand, film a number of them. And we got to be part of a compilation of other organizations across the United States doing similar work. And the whole documentary is really about the power of nature to be an educator, bring people together, and in all kinds of different settings and out of the box ways. And I think that was something really important to the filmmakers, was that people would get outside the traditional environmental education box and think of ways to make nature as teacher. And, you know, we get to kind of be along for the ride and be the guides to support that relationship building and see what happens.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see it. It's fantastic.
It's amazing. We got to have a premiere this summer, and the first time I saw it, I just bawled, you know,
because
all the people.
Well, we're going to have them, the filmmakers, on the podcast, so stay tuned. Yeah, we're getting everybody. And we had Griff Griffith as well.
He's so
good. He is incredible. So if you haven't listened to that podcast, he's already on, and he is the best storyteller on the planet. Oh. That I've ever met. And it really got me thinking about conservation. It really made me thinking, like, wow, am I really doing enough education about conservation? So just bravo. Because every little ripple, you never know how it's going to land with another person. So if you were to give one seed of inspiration to a teacher, educator, community member, what would that be?
It would honestly be just like, start somewhere, just get involved. You know, there's so many nonprofits, there's other groups like ours out there, and we all need to buy in to this idea that our children deserve a cleaner and clearer path towards adulthood on this planet that they live in. And so there are just endless ways to support that journey for them. And that's the most important thing I feel right now, is just get involved with somebody or something. Just get started.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. So where can we find you?
Yeah. well, we are on the internet. Of course, we have our website. That's www.redoaksforestschool.org. We have Instagram, which is @redoaks_explorers. We are on Facebook. We are out in the community. I'm on LinkedIn. A lot of the typical places.
Great. I will put all of that in the show notes. Is there any final thought that you would like to share with our community?
I guess I just thanks so much for taking the time to listen, because inspiring yourselves and listening to podcasts like these and hosts like Victoria spreading this message, that's how we amp ourselves up to get involved and join the movement. And you just will not regret a single minute that you spend connecting to nature and helping other people do the same.
Ah, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're ready to take the next step and dive deeper into our community, here's how you can get involved. First, you can join our one-hour workshops. These happen every month with fresh and exciting new topics each time.
It's a great way to get a taste for what we offer. If you enjoy the workshops, you can become part of our Circle membership community. And this will give you access to not only all the new workshops that happen every month, but it will also give you access to our entire workshop library, which is growing. It will also give you access to our monthly roundtable discussions. And also, as a member, you receive exclusive discounts on all our programs. It's wonderful, wonderful family. The final step, if you would like to dig deeper into our community, is to join our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program is for those educators who are eager to dig even deeper into our programming, and it's the perfect next step. If you want to learn more about each of these programs, or you're not sure where you need to start, or any questions that you might have, schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria Hackett. I will put all of that information in the show notes. You can also go to our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more information. We can't wait to welcome you into our community. Until next time,